My name is Robin Leslie, and I'm the Regional Advocacy and Communications Officer for the Jesuit Refugee Services Southern Africa.
Is it a big office in Southern Africa?
It's quite a small regional office in terms of its support staff, but we operate in 5 countries in the region, so we do have quite a few projects around the countries in the region.
It's also an area of the world which sees a lot of migrations.
Absolutely. Right. It's a complicated region. Very complex refugee situations, basically due to the nature of movement. There's a lot of cyclical migration, a lot of circular movements. People don't just come once and stay. Particularly in cases like Malawi, we have a lot of refugees that come from the Horn and use Malawi as sort of a meeting point or a destination before the ultimate destination, which is, of course, South Africa, where there's a bigger economic and social community pull. We have a lot of Ethiopians that come and stay in Zaleka maybe for 2 weeks and then skip the border down to South Africa, where there's a lot of well-developed community networks for people from the Horn. So it's more of a regional migration movement that we're trying to map rather than people coming from Congo to Malawi 7 years stay. So that makes it quite a complicated situation.
You were saying earlier there are 5 countries, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
that receive your services.
One of our most complex operations is in South Africa, where we have 3 offices. We run an urban refugees project in Pretoria and in Johannesburg, and then we have an aid for Zimbabweans program up in Makado, which is a small town on the border of South Africa and Zimbabwe. Then we also run projects in Angola. In Angola, we deal with what we used to deal with was advice to refugees and asylum seekers. But now that war's ended, there's a lot of repatriation going on. So we're helping with integration and repatriation issues there. In Malawi, we have quite a complex project also in Zaleka refugee camp, where we are the main implementing partner for the UNHCR, and we're in charge of education. So we run a lot of secondary and primary education initiatives, as well as vocational training in terms of sewing, carpentry, computer courses, and those kind of things.
So you tackle the emergency, but you also do long-term development work.
Okay. Yeah.
And you work in collaboration with UNHCR?
We do. Particularly in our camp projects, we work as implementing partners of the UNHCR. So also in Zimbabwe, our project there in Tongogara refugee camp south of Matari, we work in collaboration with the UNHCR there, providing vocational training in terms of sewing and sewing classes for men and women, as well as computer classes.
I was reading on the website that your office won an award recently.
It did. We're very proud of that.
An award for video on refugee rights, and the catchphrase was, "Don't let ignorance threaten our humanity."
Yes. The situation with that video was, the VUCA Awards is a South African initiative whereby it encourages people in broadcasting and advertising to give their time for free to an NGO or a charity that requires a bit of a boost in terms of knowledge about what they do and their projects. So JRS was approached by the University of Pretoria, some film students based there, and we were asked if it would be all right if they did a VUCA submission for our work in JRS South Africa. So, of course, we said, yes, please, that sounds wonderful. And this is what they produced, and it will be broadcast on digital satellite television in South Africa at prime time.
Shall be the policy of this nation.
It's very interesting because it shows the world that even in places like Southern Africa, where so many people have been marginalised, the culture of marginalisation continues in a certain way.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes the Southern African region definitely not unique by global standards, but very different from the situation in Europe, whereby there's very complex levels of integration that need to happen. In Europe, you have refugees coming in who are, you know, to use a colloquial phrase, the bottom of the food chain. There is really no one more destitute than them due to a whole range of welfare state initiatives in places like the UK. In South Africa, there's a lot of destitution and poverty within our own populations. So integration and acceptance and knowledge about the situations faced by these people is quite tricky.
Just recently, the Pope, for the World Day for Migrants and Refugees, wrote a very powerful letter. He called it One Human Family, which is really the message that he's trying to get across, and that I think people like yourselves are as well.
I think a lot of our projects focus on integration, particularly in our Zimbabwe refugee camp work, Tongogara, and in South Africa. We have a strong integration focus. We run a series of projects called Income Generation Initiatives, whereby we encourage refugees to approach us with small business ideas. And we really try to emphasize the positive impact that a refugee can have on their host or local community's economy. In South Africa, we have refugees that run hair salons, that run car repair workshops, or sell food on the side of the streets. We're really trying to advertise this as a positive contribution, energizing local economies. Some of our refugees that run hair salons employ South Africans. So we're really trying to focus on integration.
Are things a little bit better? There were some nasty episodes about 3 years ago in which, especially the Zimbabweans, I think, were targeted.
I think the problem with xenophobia in South Africa is that our global audience seems to think it's flashpoints. In actual fact, xenophobia is a constant low-grade aggression against foreign nationals in South Africa, and that's the reality. And what is important to understand in terms of our xenophobic attitudes is that it's not always about South Africans having a racist attitude to foreigners. It's about South Africans being frustrated by a lack of service delivery and a political power vacuums, particularly at the local governance level, and looking to the most vulnerable as a scapegoat for their frustrations. So it's really a more complex, more structural issue than simply changing people's attitudes towards foreigners. It's really more about addressing structural issues that push communities to breaking points.
You work in a very complex situation. You have the pain of the people you work with, you have the underaged, the widows, the orphans, but you also have a more of a global view of the situation. What is your feeling for a nearish future? What is your hope? What can transform the situation?
I think there's a global movement towards the recognition of complex humanitarian situations that involve refugees and migrants. There's a move towards wanting to gain a better understanding of what it means to be an urban refugee outside of a camp setting, living in an urban area, undocumented, without access to your rights or services such as education and healthcare. And I think that as long as there's a movement towards recognizing and research to better understand these situations, there's a real potential for helpful solutions to come out of a global discussion. JRS is taking the issue of urban refugees to the United Nations NGO consultations in June, and we really hope to move forward on that. In terms of, for our region, a really positive step last year was the Internally Displaced Persons Convention, which was commonly called the Kampala Convention, which is aimed at recognizing the plight of internally displaced peoples within Africa and all over the world, of course, and recognizing these people have rights. It's almost, internally displaced people fit into a gap in refugee legislation because they haven't left their country of origin, but they have and do suffer persecution of some kind. And what we see as a really positive step is Zimbabwe has signed that convention and has recognized IDPs as a problem. So that's another really positive regional step that we see, and if we can see more countries signing up to that convention, that's something really positive also. In terms of South Africa, I think looking at the Home Affairs Zimbabwe regularization process can be seen as a really positive step. I think a lot of the problem and a lot of the asylum backlog situation was because there wasn't a recognition of the urgency or recognition even of the situation on the ground. You know, it was almost business as usual day after day. The applications just got bigger. And I think this regularization project gives us some hope that the situation is being addressed. It's being noticed. There's an issue that needs to be resolved. And hopefully we can work with the Department of Home Affairs to find a solution that's suitable to all kinds of refugees, not just those that contribute to our economy, those that require our protection also.
It must be a very rewarding work to do. You sound reasonably positive.
Yes, I think in no situation is there no hope. There's always hope, and I think that's something that JRS focuses on, and we focus on positive messages and trying to empower people and accompany refugees to empower themselves. And small successes can only be magnified into big successes as long as they're supported and encouraged. So, yeah, we are positive.
And what about you? How did you end up doing what you're doing? It's a special vocation.
I went to King's College to do my master's in international conflict, and from there I worked with a legal charity that was assisting refugees and asylum seekers coming into London, particularly, and the UK overall. And we worked with quite a few Zimbabwe clients. I was doing human rights research for a large portion of the Africa and Middle East clients. And I think it really just showed the urgency of the situations, and the plight of persecution is one of the worst in the world. And it's if you are going to devote your time and energy to something, devoting it to the assistance of those who are persecuted is a worthwhile cause.
And we all know persecuted people. I mean, they're on our doorsteps, whatever city we inhabit.
Yeah, and I think that's been really interesting, is looking at how those who are persecuted and are recognized legally, as in defined by the Refugee Convention, and those that are persecuted that fall into the gaps, the legal gaps, I think recognizing those gaps and recognizing that there's a wider population that needs to be assisted is really crucial, and I think that's
what can make a difference of life and death, can't it?
Absolutely, yeah.